This is a podcast for the MA in Online Journalism by Distance Learning at Birmingham City University.
For this podcast, I've brought together a couple of brains that happen to be in the same building as me. I've got Andrew Dubber, who... Hello.
Hello.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Do you want to tell us who you are?
Sure, why not? The short version is I run the MA in Music Industries at BCU, and I talk about music online quite a lot. I'm the Reader in Music Industries Innovation is my title, so that's what I do.
And you have a slightly newer media part of their trio, a slightly less new...
Older.
No, less new. Is Caroline Bevan. Do you want to tell us about yourself, Caroline?
Yes, I've got a background in radio news, so I've worked in radio for 12 years, commercial radio, doing news bulletins, packages, all kinds of things, but very traditional, and in recent years I was actually a presenter as well, so I've got the very kind of traditional radio broadcasting background.
As we both do. I spent 15 years in commercial radio in New Zealand, making radio programmes as a producer, but then went on air and did jazz specialist music shows. So that's my background as well, but I've moved on.
You've moved on. I'm still there. I'm still there.
Right. And that's why you're here, Caroline, because you're. I wanted to kind of have someone with more recent, I'll say, broadcast
relevant
experience.
Yes. The word you're looking for.
Yes, not someone who used to, you know,
a long time ago.
Yeah, in a place far, far away where.
You still use reel-to-reel and razor blades to do the editing? And...
Oh, if only Dubber, no. It's all digital now. Yeah. It's a bit like podcasting, actually.
Right, yeah. It'd be difficult to tell the difference, really, wouldn't it?
So I'll start with Caroline. I wanted to kind of talk about some of the principles of audio production that you think apply whether you're working in broadcasting or recording online. Recording podcasts or audio slideshows. What do you think transfers across both? What are the universal principles?
I think the message is still key with both now. I know Dubber disagrees with me slightly on some of these issues, but I think getting the message across, so thinking first, who's your audience, what are you trying to say, and making sure that you tell the right person the right thing. So in podcasting, I think it has to be very much about planning ahead, thinking what you're going to say, being in the right place to say it, and then recording it and getting it out there. So I think very much the... Dubber's laughing at me here, but I genuinely agree...
Just like we're doing right now. Yeah.
Planning. I think planning ahead is a key thing for both. I think
you're right in terms of thinking about your target audience. You need to think about... And one of the questions I asked when we arrived here to do this is who's going to be listening to this program? Who are we talking to? What's this for? Because if you know that in advance... when you talk to your grandmother, you use different language than when you talk to the guy who runs the shop down the road, than when you talk to some five-year-olds you bump into. You know, you structure your language thinking about who your target audience is. I don't think that means necessarily that it means you must plan everything. And I think one of the great things about this medium and this even this kind of context, and I think it's one of the good things about really good radio too, is the more conversational it is and the more kind of natural it sounds, rather than sounding like it's read off a page, the better it gets and the more kind of approachable and likeable it becomes.
But there is the risk then that you'll sit down in a room and go, right, what are we going to talk about today?
That's
and
exactly what I do.
But it could be terrible. So are you comfortable enough to go, we're not going to use that, or would you put it out there anyway?
Well, it depends. I mean, I actually have a podcast, newmusicstrategies.com is a website I've been running for about 5 years, and we keep changing what we think it's for. And one of the things that we think it's for at the moment is a podcast. And my friend Steve, who I work with, and I sit down, pour ourselves a glass of wine, turn on the microphone, and do exactly that. What should we talk about? What's on our minds? We've done one, we were both kind of thinking about Spotify and how that works and how it relates to independent music and so on. But I like to think that we both have things to say because we think about stuff. So in that sense, yes, it's prepared because we actually know what we're talking about a little bit there. But in the sense of, okay, you say this and then I'll say that. And when you make this joke, I'll do the punchline, like a kind of a breakfast comedy radio show. I don't think that kind of translates quite as well to the medium that we do. And I think that one of the interesting things, I think, about listening to something like this podcast will be you and I haven't planned this.
No.
So I don't know to what extent you're wrong yet.
I can tell you now I'm not wrong at all. But I think I agree with you that you shouldn't plan every link, in to use a radio term, every bit of every sentence and every disagreement. But I think you should have a route as to at least a starting point and a finishing point of when the podcast is going to start and what you're going to start talking about. And when you've done enough, because I've heard podcasts which have been an hour and a half long, and they should have been 10 minutes, because they've just, the conversation has just gone on and on and on, and it's like listening to two drunk people in the pub.
Sometimes it is just two drunk people in the pub.
But that's not always a good thing. I think there are a lot of podcasts out there which should not have seen the light. And I agree that everyone should have a go, and absolutely have a go, but I think there's a lot of podcasts out there which aren't good and don't really bring anything.
Do you think you ever fall into the? And I know a lot of particularly broadcast journalists will listen to or watch kind of online journalism, online video, and online radio, and all they'll complain about are the technical qualities. Mm. The story somehow passes them by. Do you think you're ever guilty of falling into that trap?
Always.
Yes.
Always. I find it very hard to take off my radio head when I'm listening to a podcast, because I'm going, they're not planned, or the microphones are really cheap, or they're doing it via Skype and it sounds terrible. I find it very hard to separate those things too. Actually, these are three guys doing their best in their bedroom. I find it very hard to separate those issues.
See, I would go a step further than three guys in their bedroom doing their best to, are they saying something interesting? Mm. Am I learning something from this? I mean, the first podcast I ever did was 2005. Podcasting was kind of new. Mm. One of the things I was doing as part of this online music course that I was doing was kind of experimenting with the technology. And in order to do that, a colleague of mine and I decided that what we would do is actually try by making a podcast. We needed some content to test, because it was about RSS and enclosures and all this kind of technical complicated stuff. So we thought, well, we both leave work at the same time. We both take the same bus home. Let's just record our conversations on the bus, because we talk crap. And sometimes we think that's funny. And the duration is the duration of the bus journey. And we just recorded it and put it out. And that's kind of the least prepared you can be. Yeah. And the least quality. We recorded it on either our telephone or a portable MP3 player that happened to have a kind of tin pot little microphone in it. It sounded awful. It had the rattly old buses. This is before they upgraded the buses around here.
You upgraded the buses?
Yeah.
I never noticed that.
You should have. The number one bus rattled like anything, and I've got recordings to prove it. But the interesting thing was, people liked it. It was natural. People listened to it. Some other people thought we were funny, which was very flattering. And we had people travel. We had a woman come from Canada who'd visited some friends in London, had come up to Birmingham specifically to ride the bus with us. We were listed in the top 10 Guardian podcasts. Mm-hmm. We were on the news on the BBC, because these things were interesting, and it was like, you can just do this. You can just grab something. I mean, look what we've done. We're recording this on a tiny... We're in a radio studio with professional mics around that aren't working. And in order to sort of combat that, I've pulled a little kind of, I guess it's 75 quid's worth of microphone, a Zoom H1 that I got off Amazon out of my bag, and I've just pressed the record button. That's what we're using. You can just start recording. You can just make media.
But I think the difference is that you are a university lecturer. You've got a radio background, so you know how to communicate. So a podcast for you comes naturally. It's you talking, but you're a charismatic speaker anyway. So anything that you say that goes on tape will be interesting and will be well-formed.
I love that you call it tape.
Damn you.
I think Carol, it does strike me as someone, the person in this room without an audio background, apart from slicing tape with razors many years ago, is that you both do things which are perhaps second nature to you now in terms of audio that I'm still very conscious of. So I'm still very conscious, for example, of using non-verbal cues to kind of interact with you around the microphone rather than going, yeah, all the time. And you're able to jump into each other's spaces of conversation, for example, very easily. And I wonder whether the reason preparation is more important in a broadcast environment is because you are operating as a jack of all trades, Whereas in a podcast situation, you are operating in a niche where if you're any good, you know your stuff. You are the expert. You're not preparing for some expert to come in. You know your stuff inside out. And so you can waffle on over a glass of wine because you're confident in your material.
Possibly. I mean, I'm a big fan of conversation as media. And I really like that the web is a conversational medium. And the fact that you can make... I love the fact there are bad podcasts. I think there should be more of them. I think more people should turn on microphones and be bad at things because that's how you get good at things. And the opportunity to be allowed to get good at something is fantastic. It's like nobody sits down at the piano and can immediately play a concerto. You have to start out by being bad at it. But the fact is now the tools are so cheap, the access to an audience is so easy, you've got this opportunity to grow up in public and make bad media until you're making good media. And that's, you know, there are training courses for broadcasting and there are training courses for all sorts of things. But with podcasting, the medium itself is the training course. And the feedback that you get from people saying, you know, things like the technical stuff wasn't very good, you're going to get comments on that. And you've got to be a little bit thick-skinned sometimes. But I love that there's so much bad stuff out there and that you've got the opportunity to, you know, to try it and press record and think about things like, verbal cues and non-verbal cues and stuff like that. Because you're kind of reflecting on your own practice because you get to hear yourself back.
Mm. But don't you notice, though, with podcasts, that of all the criticisms that are put against them in comments, sounds not very good or you don't know what you're talking about, no one ever says you're not very interesting. And I think that's a criticism that actually some people should be told. That
right.
Actually,
because if they're not interesting, nobody's going to continue to listen to them and they will have no impact. I mean, the thing that is most critical online, the thing that will most get your attention is interestingness. And interestingness gets shared. If you're interesting to somebody, they will recommend it to their friends and more people. You can tell you're interesting because you have an audience. If you're not interesting, you just won't. And that's the filter. It doesn't matter whether your media is there or not. People don't need to be told that they're interesting. They can just look at their audience.
Doesn't by the fact that you've got a podcast online make you feel important and make you feel interesting?
So and it's you don't think people should be allowed to feel that, even if it's not true?
No, I just think that there is a lot of clutter out there and it makes it very hard to find the very good stuff.
Really?
In amongst the noise, yeah.
Then
I
don't have good enough filters because I haven't heard a bad podcast. I haven't heard bad music. I haven't read a bad blog for maybe 7 years. Because my filters are people that I rely on and trust and recommend things. It's really unusual for me to come across things that I don't like. Because you do have that, you know, you start to build up these ways of kind of stumbling across things or finding them. And unless you're just kind of typing in a random search, I'm interested in broadcasting, I'm going to type broadcasting into Google and listen to the first podcast that comes up, of course you're going to hear nonsense. Mm. Or you're going to hear this kind of the most well-funded, corporatized, whatever. But if you want things that are of interest to you specifically, you need to kind of pay attention to who really knows what they're talking about in this field and who can make good recommendations for me. I think that the great thing about the internet is that there can be a million things out there that are of no interest to you and you just won't even notice that they're there. It's not clutter, it's just other stuff that might be for other people.
We should also acknowledge the possibility that you just have very low standards.
That's entirely possible too.
I mean, let's get a bit more practical in terms of how do you make things interesting? One of the things that I've been covering at the start of this module is ideas of narrative and things like characters, movement, setting, those sorts of things which make things more interesting. How do you make a podcast interesting?
Shall I tell you how I approached the idea of interestingness?
No.
Okay. Well, if you're not, you know, if you're not bothered.
No, I think we'll just sit here and have about 5 minutes of silence.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. No, I think, I mean, my approach actually comes from broadcasting, but it comes from essentially copying people that I think are interesting. My hero is Ira Glass, mm-hmm. who does a radio program called This American Life in the States, which is the single best radio show ever made, in my opinion. And he thinks about narrative in a particular way, and he thinks about storytelling. And you can find all sorts of stuff online on YouTube and whatever, him talking about how stories are structured and how to think about how to tell a narrative. And I've been paying attention to this guy for, 10 years maybe? And the way that if I'm writing something, I'll think, how would Ira Glass write this? Because I find him interesting, and I want to be like that in my kind of delivery. And after a while, that becomes built into the way that you tell stories yourself. You know, this thing happened, then this thing happened, then this thing happened, becomes part of how you just communicate. So copying other people who are interesting is a really good way to become interesting. It's sort of the shortcut to that.
I'd also say that having a go at it, I agree that people should have a go and learn how they do things. Listen back to yourself, and if you cringe, everyone else will be cringing as well. So I think you should do as many record something every day, listen back to yourself, and you will soon learn when you're interesting. I think you can't put one recipe on everybody. Some people have got an interesting style. Some people have got an interesting way that they structure their own sentences, how they structure their own conversation. I think only you know yourself what your style is, and you have to learn that, I think, by listening and listening back to yourself and then realising, actually, I like that bit. And I do it with radio. You listen back and go, I was proud of that.
Mm.
And in your brain it goes, your brain remembers and goes, I'll try and do that again at some point. And you develop your own style. I think that's the only way to make it interesting, is if by trying it, listening back to yourself, and then you'll learn your own little skills.
But you have to remember that interestingness isn't universal. Like, I'm not interesting to most people. But the people that I am interesting to, I am quite interesting. And that's kind of what I aim for. You've got to know, like, the sort of stuff that I tend to talk about is of interest to certain types of people who are interested in certain sorts of things. And if you speak to those passions, then you're going to be interesting to those people. But if you just try to be generally interesting, the best you can probably hope for is wacky.
Which is a terrible word. Nobody wants to be wacky anymore.
No.
People are only wacky on radio as well, for some reason.
Oh, no.
Yeah, professionally wacky. And if anything's described as wacky, you know that most people aren't going to like it automatically.
Yeah, by default it's not wacky. Yeah. Which kind of, your comment actually brings us back to the idea of thinking who you're talking to and working out, are you talking to a professional? Are you talking to... You can't talk to the whole world. The whole world won't be interested in what you've got to say. Mm. Try and pin it down to who is your audience.
What about if you don't feel you do have anything interesting to say, particularly for journalists who are just embarking on a particular field and they want to bring in interesting characters? Where do you find the interesting characters to liven up your podcast?
The way to be interesting in that context is to be interested. Is to be the kind of the voice of the person who wants to find out the answers to. I mean, I think the best thing a journalist can do is be curious. And so I mean, the best sorts of questions that you can ask, particularly with audio, is what are you doing now? And you've got the opportunity to hold a mic to somebody and you can hear the noises of what they're doing, and they can say, well, when I push this button and pull this lever, this thing comes out the other end. You can actually hear that happening, and you can be the kind of the surrogate for the listener, and you can ask the sorts of questions that they would want answered from the people that you're talking to. You don't have to be the interesting one. You can kind of be the conduit to the interestingness. But that kind of curiosity will take you to the interesting people.
I think it's also useful to be a good listener, in that too often people focus on the questions they have. So they might be curious in that they have a list of questions,
sure,
but they don't respond to what's in front of them.
Even less interesting is facts. If you're going to run off a list of facts, I mean, you might as well email me. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to sit and listen to a list of statistics. But people want, when you have conversations with people, they tell stories. And I think that's kind of the interesting thing. So listening to what they say and responding to those stories is far more interesting than, is it true that? Or, you know, how many? Because I don't really care how many. I care why.
I agree. And your point, especially about listening and having your list of questions, because no one likes those awkward silences when you've got nothing to say. Have your list of questions, but then listen to them, because I've seen so many interesting stories come off little throwaway comments by an interviewee who just drops in. And obviously when we did X, Y and Z, and you're like, what? Go back to that again. How? That's when you find the interesting stories. So yes, you're right. I think pick somebody that you're interested in.
Yeah.
And try and know about them a little bit. Sometimes it's interesting to go on the fly and just go, tell me about you. I don't know anything about you, but actually it's good to know a few little things and listen to what they're saying. That's the most important bit.
I was talking to some students just half an hour ago about some interviewing a particular person who's dropped out of education, and they were going to go into this interview with how did you feel? And I kind of said to them, well, you need to set that up first. You need to tell the story. You need to bring the viewer, this was for a video as it happened, but bring the viewer into what happened first? So when did you first think about dropping out of education? You know, did your attendance start to drop? Did other people notice what happened? And only once you've established that kind of situation can you then say, okay, and how did you feel about that? Did you feel that the university could have done more, or did you feel that you were at fault? Mm-hmm. And I think that's important in terms of the narrative, as you say, the Ira Glass kind of, this happened and then this happened.
Also, I think with something like that, especially with audio, and I've used this tool a few times, is that you ask the person a question and they answer and you go, you actually look quite sad when you said that. Because the listener can't see what the person is looking like, or they, you know, why did you do a little dance when you said that? Why did you look happy about that? Suddenly then, you're telling a picture, you're sort of describing what's happening. And then it can lead you into actually a completely different answer. That's a good little tool saying, you looked sad when you said that, why?
And what about, I mean, I'm here hosting this discussion with not a clue what I'm doing compared to you two guys. What about hosting a discussion, kind of driving it forward, trying to create a narrative within a discussion situation?
Well, I like the idea of the host as a host in the sense of a party. You kind of invite people in, you set the rules.
Get you drunk.
Get us drunk and, yeah, take the photos and put them on Facebook. But, I mean, you kind of set the context within which this kind of conversation can happen. And you can kind of set the parameters for that. And you have certain things that you want discussed. And you know when it needs to, you know, everybody needs to go home as well. And that kind of just allowing for that sort of conversation to take place is a nice thing to do. But party host is kind of how I like to think about those sorts of things.
The mixing, so if conversation starts to ebb off a little bit, then either you introduce a new subject or you put those little seeds in to help people get on and talk.
And always serve food.
And no nudity allowed. Oh. I did stipulate that. I feel the conversation is ebbing now, so I'd like to end with some final tips. What would be the key pieces of advice that you would give someone who's studying online audio and hasn't done it before?
I would say pick an interesting setting. It doesn't have to be in a radio studio. If you're doing something about the outside, then do it outside. If you're doing something about a shopping centre, try and do it somewhere where there's a bit of background noise. It's always nice to get in the mood, I think, by having a setting. And I will still say, prepare even a little bit.
Just remember that people are interesting, and be interested in them, and ask them things about what makes them interesting. In fact, one of the questions I like most is to ask yourself, not to ask somebody else, is what's interesting about that? Because normally people will tell you things, and you go, okay, and then you'll ask them something else, and they'll tell you something, okay, and you've kind of learned facts. But if you start to ask yourself, well, what's interesting about that, you'll start to come up with better questions. And you'll start to have sort of more interesting conversations. So that's kind of my big tip. But record lots and throw out far more than you publish would be my biggest tip.
Okay. Andrew Dubber, Caroline Bevan, thank you very much.
Cheers.